He was unique. He didn't recognize failure. He only saw the opportunities to play. He knew that this game he played, it was something special. And when he walked onto that field... Frank paused and looked away, lost in the image his mind was creating to keep up with the word picture he was painting aloud. When he walked out there, he honored the game. Gene just turned away and lit another cigarette. "Gene Moore?" Frank Boudreau barked out. "Get up off your sorry ass and look at me like a man. Sitting on that bar stool is not the way I want to see you. You're talking like a damn loser and you're starting to look the part." When Gene stood up, his stool fell over and clattered on the floor. The few patrons left inside Bruno's were also standing now, well away from the bar. "Well, Frank, if you know so much, tell me why you didn't make it in the majors as a player. Why is it that you've been making your living off the talents of others?" Frank shook his head at the pathetic question. "Gene, you really have changed. You are determined to tear down your life and make yourself feel better by swiping at me." The scout leaned forward. "Let me tell you how I see my life and what I do. I've spent my time in baseball helping kids make their dreams come true. Some have the heart to overcome the obstacle standing between them and the bigs and go on to live their dream. Some do not. I can find them and I can sign them, but I can't play the game for them. And frankly, I'm proud of my career in baseball." Frank took another sip from his beer. "What about you, Gene? Are you proud of what you've become?" Gene turned away and hung his head, reaching for his empty beer bottle that Bruno had already picked up. "Bruno, get me another bottle." "No," answered the bartender. "You've had enough." Frank's voice softened and warmed at the same time. "Listen to me, son. That kid I was talking about earlier, you remember? That boy who loved to catch? I want to tell him something." Frank paused. "If you see him, can you give him a message from Frank Boudreau?" The words touched Gene deeply, unlike anything had for months, perhaps years. He smiled for the first time in a long while. "Yeah," he replied, nodding his head. "If I see him, I'll tell him." "What do you want him to know, Mr. Boudreau?" "Tell him the Brooklyn Dodgers fired me the same day they released him, and tell him that I, too, was hurt. Tell him the Pittsburgh Pirates hired me, and they want me to help build them a world championship team. Tell him he's the first person I came to see. You tell him if you see him that I'm staying at the Hotel Benton, over on the square. You tell him I have a train ticket for him to Greenville, Mississippi, and a potential career with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Will you give him that message?" Gene looked up, barely able to contain his emotions. He had never been so embarrassed in his life. "Yes, Frank. If I can find him, I'll give him the message. I'll look real hard for him, too, but he may be gone." "He's not gone," whispered Bruno between clenched teeth. "He's not gone." "No one heard him. I think this kid's worth looking for. If you find him, tell him Frank Boudreau passes along his regards, and that even with a bad ankle, he might still be one of the game's greats. You tell him that for me, okay?" "Hey, bartender!" Frank called out. "Yes?" Bruno replied. "Where's the best place in town to have breakfast?" Frank asked. "Around the corner across from the custard stand and about two blocks down. A little whitewashed concrete building called Heavy Turner's Cafe." Bruno replied without having to think about it. "I'll have breakfast there tomorrow morning, say 9 o'clock, just in case anyone wants to see me before I leave." Frank winked at Bruno and glanced over at Gene, who was unable to meet his gaze. The scout threw a dollar bill on the bar, knocked on the bar with his knuckles twice, looked at Gene for one more long moment, and then turned and walked out the door into the night. Chapter 31, Resurrection. Heavy Turner's Cafe was exactly how Bruno described it. Everyone who ate there passed through a rickety screen door with a rusty metal sign advertising Bunny Bread. Frank was originally from the Midwest and so was not unfamiliar with small-town America. But Cesar was so small, so different. Heavy's was just one more reminder of that fact. At 8:45 a.m., Frank walked through the door and could not help but smile. Behind the counter was a man who stood 5 feet nothing, but weighed well over 300 pounds. "Let me guess," Frank laughed. "You must be Heavy." "And you must be Albert Einstein," answered Heavy. "Right," Frank replied, slightly embarrassed. "I deserve that." "Yep," nodded the fat man. Frank couldn't help but notice that the entire top half of his body shook as his head bobbed up and down. Heavy's had a breakfast counter, a concrete floor, and a set of mismatched tables and chairs. It was not the kind of eating establishment Frank was accustomed to, but this was Cesar, Illinois, and the southern Illinois town had a personality distinctly its own. "I know who you really are," Heavy said. "You're that baseball scout." Frank nodded. "You're going to get Gene to play ball?" Frank shrugged. "I came here thinking that baseball needs him. Now, after seeing him, I think he needs baseball more." "Yeah, that's for sure," Heavy replied. "But I'll tell you, we need him to play more than Gene or the Pirates need each other. Maybe you haven't noticed, but this town has nothing going for it. We have been stripped of our pride, our dignity. There's no reason to come to Cesar, and no reason to stay." Heavy reached over and wiped the sticky counter in front of Frank and handed him a menu. It was greasy and stained with coffee. "Gene gave us something to look forward to," he continued, "something to hope for. Now, well, we watch him sit on a bar stool and drink his life away." Frank sighed. "I know, I saw that last night." Heavy seemed lost in thought for a moment. "You know, I guess he's become one of us, when we were hoping he would make us like him." Frank's trip to Cesar began to seem more like a mission than a scouting assignment. Gene needs baseball. Cesar needs Gene. Ray Laws needs Gene, and the Pirates need Ray. Frank realized there was much at stake here. It was a mission that had to succeed. "Absorbing the ambiance, Frank?" Gene asked as he walked in through Heavy's screen door. The scout answered without turning to look at Gene. "Well, I'll tell you, Heavy and I have just been sitting here talking about life." "Be careful," Gene replied. "Heavy's the town philosopher. He'll make you think, hard. Around here, that sort of thing can only get you in trouble." Gene smiled at the man behind the counter. "Morning, Heavy." "Morning, Gene." "You know, this is the first time I've seen you smile since before you left for the war." Gene ignored the observation and joined Frank at the table. Each man studied the other for several seconds. It had been several years since Gene had seen Frank. His hair had more gray, it had receded a tad in front, and his forehead was no longer wrinkle-free. Otherwise, the ball scout had not changed that much. Frank was thinking something quite different about the young man sitting across from him. The morning light revealed just how much Gene had changed in such a short time. It wasn't just the additional weight. He looked several years older than 24. Dark circles pulled at his once youthful eyes, which were sunken and bloodshot. Even his hands looked old. Gene looked at the scout, his voice barely above a whisper. "You never came, Frank." For a moment, Frank was unsure what he meant, and then it dawned on him. "Gene, I did. I got to the hospital the same day you left. It was the day I was called into Branch Rickey's office and let go. I didn't know until that meeting they had released you. I told Mr. Rickey as I was walking out that he had made two mistakes. The biggest was releasing you, and the second, well, without sounding prideful, was releasing me." "I never knew you came," answered Gene. "I thought you had forgotten about me." "I guess that explains a lot." Heavy set down two mugs of steaming black coffee. He stood there to listen in on the conversation, but a look from Gene sent him back behind the counter. "I'm sorry you lost your job." Frank smiled. "Well, we have a new lease on life, you and I. I have been hired by the Pittsburgh Pirates, and they want me to help them build a world championship team." "Congratulations, Frank. That's great," Gene said. He meant it. "And it's a very small world, Gene. The Pirates have an outstanding pitching prospect who is languishing in the minors, partly because no one can catch him. Have you ever heard of such a thing?" Gene sipped from his mug and nodded, wiping his chin with a napkin. "Yeah, I have." "Have you ever caught a forkball?" Frank asked. Gene smiled. "You know I have. Ray Laws throws it better than anyone, or at least he used to." "He still does. Ray is in Greenville, Mississippi, and he is in desperate need of a good catcher. Ray needs you, Gene." The words echoed in his mind as his thoughts slipped back to his time in the Navy, when he wanted nothing more than to squat behind the plate and catch Ray's forkball. Gene sighed wistfully. How he missed those days. "Here's the long and short of it, Gene," Frank said, cutting to the chase. "Every kid dreams of getting his shot. For the few, for the very few who get it, it's usually their one chance at greatness. But it's even rarer to get a second chance. Gene, you have a second chance." He paused and locked his gaze on Gene's bloodshot eyes. "Can you make it?" "I don't know. You're older. You're certainly out of baseball shape, but the constant work on the farm has kept your muscles hard and strong. Sure, you have a couple of metal bolts in your ankle, but let's face it, speed was never your forte. I can't argue there, Frank, smiled Jane. Frank smiled back, pleased his former and perhaps current prospect was still listening and interested. Perhaps he had worried for nothing. Your arm is one of the best, and if you were running the bases, well, you were usually trotting, continued the scout. But besides all that, your true value is your understanding of the game. I guess I'd call it your baseball IQ. Yours is high, very high. You are what the Pirates need, and quite frankly, you are exactly who Ray Laws needs. Frank, began Jane, I know I was pretty good, better than good, great even. But I feel like such a failure, and I can't seem to get over that feeling. It swamps my every waking hour. Frank shook his head. Don't say was, Jane. Say am. You are only 24. Many men are just beginning their careers in the big leagues at your age. You still have plenty of time. Heavy made another appearance to take their order, but both men waved him away. When he left, Frank finally took a sip of his coffee. Jane, I'm not here to compliment you, pad your ego, or make you feel good. I'm here on business, period. I'm here to sign you to an agreement and send you to Greenville. Once you're there, you have to live or die by your abilities. Like I said last night, I can help start, or in your case, restart, your dream. But only you can live it. Jane's back was to Heavy's screen door, so he didn't notice the people gathering outside the door looking in. A throng was growing by the minute. Frank had noticed the onlookers the moment they had moved from the counter to the table. Jane nodded, exhaled loudly, and placed both palms flat on the table. Frank, I would love to help Ray. You know I want to play. Frank raised his voice so those outside the door could hear and said, Then play, Jane. Why not? What do you have to lose? I have the power to sign you right now. We can make this happen. The Pirates want you. The scout's words were exactly what the curious assessor wanted to hear. When the cheers erupted outside, Jane spun around to see what all the excitement was about. When he realized what was going on, he turned back to the scout with a sheepish grin on his face. Frank only laughed, pleased to see an almost boyish look on Jane's face. These people love you, Jane. These people need you. They're never going to leave this town, but with you in baseball, they can live their dreams through you, Jane. Play ball. Do it for the people assessor. What if I let them down again? Jane asked. You only let them down if you say no. You go to Greenville and give it your best shot. Whether you make it or not, the people of this town will have had their time in professional baseball. You say no? Well, everyone loses. Frank finished his coffee and stood. He looked down at Jane and then out the screen door at the gathering crowd. Let's walk outside and see what they have to say. Without waiting for a response, the scout walked to the screen door, pushed it open, and stepped outside. Jane was still sitting at the table. The sun was shining brightly, the storm of the previous evening now a distant memory. Jack Cockrum, the mailman, and Eugene Basso were at the head of the crowd. Well, Mr. Boudreau, is he going to play ball or not? Jack demanded. I don't know, Frank shrugged, looking back over his shoulder at the screen door. Why don't you call him out and we'll ask him? Jack and Eugene looked at each other and nodded. Jane! They yelled. No response. Jack waited a few seconds and shouted a second time, Jane! Without any prompting, one person at a time joined the chant. Jane! 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 The chant stunned Jane. It sounded as if the whole town was outside yelling his name. Heavy looked over the counter and smiled. Hey, Jane, this is bad for business, he said. No one could get in here to eat if they wanted to. Are you ready to play ball, or is becoming the town drunk more appealing to you? Heavy always had a way with words. Jane slowly stood. I don't know, Heavy. That's a tough call to make on the spot. I'll think about it and get back to you. Heavy started laughing and Jane joined him. They started moving to the door but stopped before he reached it. A career as a drunk probably doesn't pay that much, does it? No, Jane, I suppose it doesn't, Heavy replied. Thanks, Heavy. Jane took a deep breath and walked through the screen to find a crowd of almost 100 people gathered to encourage him to take full advantage of his second opportunity. Frank held up his hand, and the crowd fell silent. What will it be, son? Can the good people of Cesar count on you to be the best you can be, regardless of the outcome? Jane dug his hands into his pants pockets, pulled them out again, and then awkwardly stuck them in again. He looked shy, but happy. He looked more like the 15-year-old Frank had first seen 8 years earlier at the lumberyard hitting the ball a country mile. "Where is Greenville, Mississippi, anyway, Frank?" "Yes!" screamed Jack as everyone erupted into thunderous applause. The people crowded in to hug Gene and show their appreciation. Each in his own way wanted to make some connection to the ball player. It was at that moment Frank realized he was witnessing a resurrection. Heavy's little restaurant had been like a tomb. Frank's offer from the pirates had rolled away the stone, and the townspeople had called Gene out. Cesar, Illinois had been brought back to life. Chapter 32, Reporting to Greenville. Gene spent the next 2 weeks working out. He stayed away from Bruno's, got off the alcohol, and slept normal hours. Most of each day was spent throwing a baseball again and lightly swinging a bat. When he tried squatting behind the plate, however, his ankle refused to cooperate. Gene massaged it every hour and did his best to stretch his muscles, but getting into a traditional catcher stance just wasn't going to happen. He tried to convince himself that a few more days of training, a few more stretches, and a few more attempts would make it better. His inability to throw as hard as he once had saddened him, but he remained hopeful he could carry his own. The pain would diminish, and some of his mobility would return. When the day arrived, Gene packed a bag, said his goodbyes, kissed his mom and sisters, and caught a ride to the Carbondale train station. As he was standing on the ramp waiting for the train, he remembered how, 7 years earlier, a younger and much more innocent Gene Moore had left the same station to begin his hitch in the United States Navy. He was just a kid then, a kid who loved to play baseball more than drink beer from a bottle. He had been almost unaware of the war that deposited him in the Navy. 17, and in the best shape of his life. Now the man standing on the same platform was smoking a cigarette and walking with a slight limp. The changes were more than just physical. The last time he caught the train from Carbondale, Gene was convinced no one in the world could play the game like he could. It was not his skill alone that gave him that confidence. It was his absolute and unconditional love of baseball. But he was a different man now. The game had broken first his ankle, then his heart, before tossing him aside for someone younger and faster. The game had almost forgotten about him, but he had never forgot about the game. Gene now had a second chance, but he was skeptical and apprehensive. His confidence was gone, or nearly so. He knew his sprint to first base was far from what it needed to be, and he knew again firsthand that getting in and out of his catcher stance was painful. Once quick and agile, Gene was now slow and clumsy. Several times over the last half hour, he nearly convinced himself to leave the train platform and walk across to the Station Street bar. Somehow, he resisted the urge, but he knew if the train did not arrive soon, the bar would be a place of comfort. It was calling out his name. Gene knew he liked to drink too much, but he denied in his mind what he knew in his heart. "I'm not an alcoholic," he thought. "I don't have to have a drink. I drink because I like it, not because I need it. I can quit any time." Heck, he thought, "I've only had 3 beers in the last 2 weeks. Gene decided to walk across the street and have just 1 beer. But as he turned and started to walk down the ramp, someone yelled out, "Here she comes!" The train to Greenville was rounding the bend, slowing down as it prepared to stop in Carbondale. Gene boarded and found his seat. It only took him a few minutes to discover that the train had a bar, so he headed for it. The pressure to succeed was immense. Frank, the whole town, everyone was pulling for him. He knew the last thing he needed was a drink, but he also knew the alcohol helped deaden the pain. "Oh, what the heck," he mumbled to himself. "It's a long ride, and I'll just have a few to make the trip go faster. I won't drink again till the season ends." Gene Moore headed for the bar, leaving the 15-year-old catcher behind. "Next stop, Greenville, Mississippi," the conductor bellowed as he walked through Gene's car. Gene sat up. His head was throbbing. He was about to reach for his cigarettes when he realized he had smoked his last one a few hours earlier. How had he gotten back to his seat from the bar? The train rocked back and forth and gradually slowed as it entered the Greenville station. Gene said a quick and silent prayer that he would not have to play ball that afternoon. The irony of the situation did not escape him. It was the first time in his life that he actually hoped he would not have to play the game that he loved so much. When the train creaked its way to a complete stop, Gene tossed his old Navy sea bag off the train and jumped down beside it. He cringed when he hit the ground. His ankle was killing him. The station looked like it was a century old, small and more in need of a paint job than the lumberyard or Pop's barn. It appeared deserted. "Gene Moore?" asked an older man as he stepped from the shadows. Gene nodded and smiled. The man looked at him more closely and called out his name again. "I'm Gene Moore." "You're Gene Moore?" asked the man with surprise. "Yes, I'm Gene Moore." The man stood with his hands on his hips. "You're Gene Moore, huh?" He looked Gene up and down and said, "You don't look like a ball player to me, but if you say you're Gene Moore, you must be." The man's accent was so heavy that at times Gene could barely make out some of his words. "What do you mean I don't look..."